Kim, thank you so much. It's us. It's Bill Leff over here, and of course, Wendy Snyder right over there. Every Monday, Eric Zorn joins us, and he throws an adjective at us that he wants to be described by. Today, he is the jaunty Tribune columnist, Eric Zorn. Eric, number one, hello.
Hello, and hello, Wendy.
And how do you explain that jauntiness that you have?
It's just a general, when the weather gets better like it did over the weekend, it just makes me feel like I'm happy and jolly.
When we get a day or two like that, we need to be happy about it because they're few and far between. But don't you feel once the weather gets back cold again that you've been teased and it's not
cheating.
Fair?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't feel quite as good. You're right. I mean, you thought it just felt like spring was here,
right,
on Saturday.
When in reality, we have to wait 3 or 4 more months, right, until it's like that consistently. That just doesn't seem fair.
And then it'll last a couple of days, and then it'll be really grossly hot. So.
We talked a little bit at the top of the show, Wendy and I did, and of course Steve Bertrand and the listeners as well, about what went on over the weekend politically. Are we surprised anymore when Trump wins these things? I know at some point it's just going to be, oh, there's another state or two. Have we reached that plateau yet?
Well, the polls showed that he was going to win in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And there was always a thought like, well, maybe the polls are wrong this time, because they were a little bit off in Iowa. If you remember, Ted Cruz beat him, and there were some polls that had shown Cruz had gained and was close, and then at one point Cruz was ahead, but then Trump was supposed to win in Iowa and then didn't. So there's a thinking that maybe people were lying to pollsters, or that the support for Cruz and Rubio and some of the other candidates wasn't being adequately measured. That didn't really seem to prove to be the case in South Carolina. He got about the same percentage of the vote that the pollsters thought that he was going to get. And the nationwide polls so far are showing him still way out in front.
Yeah.
And everyone is talking about, well, okay, now Jeb Bush dropped out,
yeah,
of course, Saturday night. And
yeah,
so there's a question of, well, okay, now where does his support go? And the thinking is that people who are inclined to vote for someone like Trump were not going to be voting for Jeb Bush. Was not their first. Trump wasn't their second choice. Okay, it was the thought, well, these are more establishment lane Republicans.
But they keep polling voters and saying, this is your first choice, but if your candidate is gone, whose vote do you go to? And Trump even pointed out in his victory speech that he's going to get some of those votes. They'll
yeah,
be split.
He thinks so, and you know, you never know where voters are going to go. And I heard some these Republican establishment people are going on the air over the weekend. They're saying, well, yeah, Cruz is at 34%, something like that, but we think that is his ceiling,
right,
not his floor, that he's not going to grow from that, that he has this core support, but that everybody else is still looking for somebody else. Now, I look at those numbers, and I see you add up Cruz and Trump, and I consider that kind of the crazy wing of the Republican primary field,
yeah,
and they're over 50% now.
Yeah.
And I think if and when, say, Cruz drops out,
yeah,
I'm not sure that his supporters are natural Rubio supporters.
Right.
I think they might be are much more likely to be Trump supporters. And that was just one of the things that I think is really interesting about this primary. One of the things was that the exit polling that we saw, that in South Carolina, CNN found 53% said they feel betrayed by the Republican Party. These are Republicans saying they feel betrayed.
Betrayed
by the Republican
Party. Because why?
But because they feel like the Republican Party gets their people elected.
Yeah.
Often espousing socially conservative norms, and then suddenly, you know, they do nothing really about abortion. They gay marriage comes and happens, and tax rates for the wealthy. I mean, the Republicans voters feel like that the party is basically on false pretenses gets elected.
It's empty
like,
promises.
We're going to, and of course, empty promises is both parties are
sure
totally guilty of that. But that this feeling of like, hey, you know, you keep telling me things are going to get better for me, and they're not getting better for me.
Yeah.
I think Democrats are feeling some of that same feeling, which is a lot of the party feel as well. Hey, we elected Barack Obama 8 years ago, and we're not living in this paradise that we were kind of hoping we were going to live in. That, you know, we're not going to come together. Remember Obama's speech in 2004. We're not red states and blue states with the United States, and
right,
he's going to bring people together. And before him, George W. Bush, he's a uniter, not a divider. That the politicians are always promising this, and they're unable to deliver it because we have a deeply divided country.
But so you can blame some of that, not all of that, but you can blame some of that on gridlock. And I don't know that I can't imagine a scenario where that gridlock will ever go away. That gridlock is there forever, isn't it?
Well, it comes and goes. It gets worse and better. Obviously, in the 70s and some in the 80s, there was a lot more cooperation between the parties in Washington, certainly. And you've seen it in Illinois as well. But when the parties go to their respective corners, and I don't think it's been this dramatic
no,
in a long time, where you've got a candidate like Bernie Sanders, who is all the way on the left, making what I consider to be many of his absurd promises.
Yeah.
Promises that I like, but I think he just can't possibly deliver on them.
But they all are. I mean, you pick a guy or a girl who's not making absurd promises that are just as empty can be. And I know that we're all, as a nation, we're nodding and smiling and going, that would be nice.
Well,
but
yeah, they all say that. Obviously, and that's you know, the art of politics is you promise a lot. David Axelrod said something I thought was very telling the other day about Hillary Clinton's problem campaigning against Bernie Sanders. Is he says it's really hard to be the one who's trying to kill Santa Claus. and that's really the situation. I mean, Hillary Clinton, for all her faults that she may have, she is not really overpromising the way some of these other candidates are. She's not saying, hey, we're all going to get along. Everyone, that would be foolish coming from her. She knows better.
Yeah.
You know, the country's not going to all come together to link arms and fight our problems together. So, you have this so when you have a situation where the voters in their own party, the Republican voters, are so turned off by their own elected officials, you have a strong desire for an outsider candidate to come in. Cruz is seen as an outsider because everybody hates him in Washington. The Republican establishment kind of hates him, and certainly everybody in the Senate hates him. And so, when you have that appetite, those people are not necessarily going to say, oh, well, now we're going to go with Marco Rubio, or now we're going to go with John Kasich. That's not where those voters are going to go. So people are, the question that on everybody's mind now is Trump unstoppable at this point?
When one of the candidates gets what they consider to be a major endorsement, and a good example of this would be Marco Rubio gets the endorsement of Nikki Haley,
right,
the governor who was named after two high school cheerleaders. That's my favorite governor name of all. When he gets an important somebody backing him the way he did with Nikki Haley, an incredibly popular governor. Nikki Heather Haley, now three high school cheerleaders. You would think that would translate to votes, and it just didn't. How did that not translate to votes?
Well, it was like the endorsements that Chris Christie got in New Hampshire. He was endorsed by the major newspaper there.
Yeah.
I think Kasich was endorsed by. I mean, these endorsements are not meaning as much anymore.
But with Kasich, it did. He did raise a bit from the endorsement, not enough, but a bit. But whose endorsement do you have to really make it matter?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in South Carolina with the Democrats. They're voting a week from Saturday, this coming Saturday, and Hillary Clinton got the endorsement of Jim Clyburn, who's the esteemed African-American congressman from down there. And his endorsement was highly sought after. And the question is going to be whether Hillary Clinton can hang on to that African-American minority support that she considered to be her firewall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, people are saying, if you need a firewall, that means there's a fire going on. you got some problems.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of endorsements are really going to be interesting to see because so far they haven't proven to be that important. Trump has almost no endorsements. In fact, he's got like Howard Stern, I think.
He's got weird, a caller pointed out before, and we've talked about this before, he's got like white supremacist groups that are endorsing him and that sort of thing. And I don't know that that's great for business.
Well, but nothing is stopping. He's saying all these things that he's saying every time. When he picks a fight with the Pope, you're thinking, okay, that's it. finally, my prediction's going to come true. He's gone too far this time.
Yeah.
Nothing he says seems to go too far. I just want to also look at these exit polls. Republican voters in South Carolina, 3 in 4 of them broadly support a temporary ban on Muslims entering the U.S.
3 out of 4?
3 out of 4 of them. Also, 44% think that illegal immigrants, we should just deport them back to their home countries. And these are people who Donald Trump is really speaking to, and it speaks to this a very, very strong viewpoint that isn't going to be mollified by someone who's in the center, who's John Kasich, who's hugging people at his rallies and talking about how we need to slow down. And even though that message resonates with me, and I think would resonate with a lot of people in the middle, the middle is not driving this on either side right now.
No.
So it's a fascinating turn of events, and we're all looking to see. First of all, on Tuesday, I think it is, in Nevada, is when the Republicans caucus there, I believe.
Yeah.
The calendar's all screwed because they're going.
I know, it flip-flops.
Nevada, South Carolina, both parties are choosing different days. And it's going to be interesting because Trump is probably going to hold on to that too.
Yeah.
And then we are all waiting for a week from tomorrow, March 1st, which is this the so-called SEC primary, the Super Tuesday primary, where a lot of southern states are going to be in play. And it's going to be really interesting to see whether Trump can run the table, if he can, in which case it's over.
Yeah.
Or whether Rubio and Cruz can pick out their strongholds and hang on, fight another day. I don't know why Ben Carson is still in the race. I do know that Kasich is hanging on. He's waiting for Michigan. He's waiting for Ohio. He's, you know, he's the governor of Ohio, so he presumably will win that.
Yeah.
He'll probably be strong in Michigan. And you know, it's March 15th is the primary in Illinois, mm-hmm. and Kasich has institutional support here for whatever that might be worth. A lot of the the Republican establishment, the organization here, is behind
him. They like him.
So he may have a chance to, if he can hang on until the middle of March, he may have enough delegates to keep himself going, and then he's also going to have to. He's going to have money problems too.
Yeah,
so
that's an issue.
So all these things we're waiting to see. But certainly, anyone who's got their money on Trump, it's looking better.
Yeah, how about that? Eric Zorn is here, the jaunty columnist for your Chicago Tribune.
I do want to know what Wendy has to say, but maybe after the break.
After the break, we'll get Wendy's opinions on this. Thanks, Eric, for reminding me. Stick around, and if you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, along with Eric Zorn on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn has joined us, and we're talking about what you would have to agree is the strangest political campaign, the strangest political fight of all time, this year's election. Has it ever been stranger in your eyes?
No, I don't think so. Wendy, before you jump in here, I do want to say that it's, you know, what we've seen is with this polarization, I think, is new. If you remember in previous years, the Republican Party has tended to go back toward the middle. McCain,
yeah.
Bush, both Bushes,
yeah.
McCain, Romney, they're all mainstream establishment Republicans. And ultimately, you know, the people like, I'm blanking on his name now, the 999, Herman Cain.
Yeah.
You know, we got people like that who they've pop up in the polls and then they go down. It's kind of a ritual of the primary season. People go, oh my goodness, look at this. The party's been taken over by Herman Cain. And, not really. That hasn't happened. People thought that we've been saying that all along, ever since last summer. We've been saying, isn't this funny? Donald Trump has come along and he's a reality TV star and people are saying they support him, but it's not going to last. And it has suddenly lasted. And that's, you know, the fact that he has lasted a long time is amazing. But the thing that is truly amazing is that the other candidates have been dragged over or were already there. I mean, Ted Cruz has always been a very hardcore conservative.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio, a more moderate voice generally, but he's been pulled far over to the left, to the right, I'm sorry. So you've got the three leading candidates now who I think are very close to being unelectably right wing in the country, given the way that the country is right now. So that if you get someone like Hillary Clinton, despite all her baggage, you may just find out that the country's going to go, well, you know, we can't have somebody who is that extreme. And Hillary Clinton is not extreme. I'm not going to say she's got her other issues. No question
right.
about that. But, you know, the rap on her right now within the Democratic Party is that she's too establishment, that she's too comfortable with Wall Street, that she's too moderate, that she's on trade, on immigration, all these other issues. She's too moderate. You know, there's certainly some heft to that argument, but if you generally American elections, political elections are sort of fought between the 40-yard lines.
Mm-hmm.
You've got no matter who any party nominates, going to get 40% of the popular vote, mm-hmm. either side. So you're fighting over that 20% in the middle, and those people who are, you know, swing voters and so on in these swing states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and so on. And I just don't see these candidates who are far on the edges getting those kind of votes, which is why I've been cautioning about Bernie Sanders. I mean, as much as what he says may make you vibrate, it's it's the idea of someone like that getting those people in the middle is dicey. It's a tough thing. And if Bernie Sanders is lucky enough to run against Donald Trump, then I think he could probably win. But
there was a quintessential moment for Donald Trump over the weekend. He wins South Carolina and he comes out to make his speech, you know, to thank everybody, to wish those who ran against him, to say you guys did a good job, but I'm the guy that won. And he said, he was talking about, and he goes back to this a lot, his wall that he's going to build between the United States and Mexico.
It's going to be a beautiful wall.
It's going to be a great wall.
Are going to pay for it.
The Mexicans are going to pay for it. So he brings up the fact that the former president of Mexico said, guess what? We're not going to pay for it. Say that all you want. That's not going to happen. And then Trump said, and it's the most Trump-like moment that I remember. guess what? Then that wall's going to be 10 feet higher. And everybody applauded. And I went, that's the energy that he runs on, is if you're going to screw with me, I'm going to try to make your life even more difficult.
Well, the new tack from that you're hearing from Rubio, and I think to some extent from Cruz, is they want Trump to be much more specific about his plans.
Yeah.
I mean, his tax plans are nutty, and his health care plan is very vague.
Yeah.
And you know, all the things that he says, it's basically a lot of bumper stickers. And their tack now is that we're going to demand that he be specific about these things. And I think that is a completely fruitless demand right now.
Because he won't be.
He won't be, and the voters won't care.
Yeah.
That he excites voters. Somebody's saying, like, you know, he speaks his mind. He just says what he's thinking. And someone said on Twitter, they said, yeah, that's what my four-year-old does that. Like, four-year-old speaks his mind. He is not qualified to be president. So that's, you know, that's really where you are here. You've got these candidates who think, like, we're going to believe that the old rules are going to suddenly apply again. The rules that haven't applied since last summer are going to suddenly apply. The voters are going to go, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We can't have somebody who just shoots his mouth off. We can't have somebody who doesn't have specific, you know, 15-point policy plan.
Right.
I mean, Jeb Bush had the most robust policy plan.
Didn't do him any good.
Of any of those candidates.
Didn't matter.
And he spent the most money. So, you know, the rules about money seem to be going out the window. He spent more money in all three, Jeb Bush, in all three of those early states. So.
Well, you see those numbers of what he spent per voter, per state, and you get sick to your stomach because you say that money could have gone to so many better things.
And evidently that money is going to be going toward now an effort to stop Trump, that the party's
sure.
is coalescing again around this idea that we can stop Trump. But I don't know what message, like, you can't say, tell us about your, how are you going to pay for that wall?
Yeah.
That's not a question that's going to throw him off his game. So
he doesn't, all he says is Mexico pays for it. You don't have to worry about it. And it's 10 feet higher.
No, but, you know, but since Steve just walked in, we'll get to Wendy in a second. But
all right.
Steve, we'll be talking about this probably on the Mincing Rascals podcast on Friday. Right?
Absolutely.
It'll come up, I would imagine.
It's the
you know,
best
Bill subscribed. Wendy subscribed. She's always talking about it.
Just mentioned earlier today, as a matter of fact. Eric, great to see you. Have a great rest of the week. We'll talk to you a week from today, and we'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a little bit. It's us. It's Bill, and that's Wendy on WGN.